Underwriting support for Between the Stacks comes from Lakeville Books and Stationery, 329 Main Street in Lakeville, Connecticut, offering a wide selection of illustrated books, fine writing needs, and more. On the web, lakevillebooks.com. Robin Hood Radio presents Between the Stacks, a weekly chat about our local libraries.
Hi, Courtney. This is Sarah from Kent Memorial Library.
Hey, Sarah. How are you doing?
Great. Nice to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, too.
Our topic today is fundraising.
Yes, and I feel like you are going to be the champion of this conversation.
Well, this is what we do. This is what we do around here. Well, before I launch into my diatribe about fundraising, I was wondering, just to get a sense of what you do at Millbrook, how much do you have to raise every year to manage, or are you mostly supported by taxes?
So we have an interesting situation where we definitely get tax funding. We passed our first 414 vote in almost 10 years last year, which was very exciting.
That is
We had almost doubled how much we were getting, so that was a huge help.
Mm-hmm.
We also are really lucky that we have a trust that was set up over 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very, very long time ago, and we do get income from that, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have a pretty significant gap that we need to cover with fundraising. So I think probably like our main consistent thing that we do every year is an annual appeal letter, which is basically a letter to people asking for donations.
Mm-hmm.
And we are very fortunate where we have a lot of people in Millbrook who are very generous and support that way.
Yeah.
We also do a brick fundraiser where for $300 people can purchase a brick, which will be put into our walkway,
nice.
Which has been pretty popular.
And that just happens, that's just kind of in perpetuity.
Yeah. I've had, there's been like a spike this spring because I think more people heard about it. So that's been very nice.
Nice.
And then we are doing one big board fundraiser this year, which is a salon hang, which we're trying for the first time,
mm-hmm.
where we are going to be doing a community exhibition of art in our gallery space, and mm-hmm. people can buy it. So people can submit their art. It's going to be on display from November 7th to the 29th.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, people come in, they can look at the art on walls, they can see if they want to buy anything, and then the funds will go to the library. And we're going to have like a opening party for that, which should be really fun.
Nice.
And then our other big fundraiser that we do is the Friends of the Library do it, and they do a really, really great job. And it's pretty popular. It's our holiday silent auction.
Oh.
So they kick that off usually the first Friday in December. We match it up with the Parade of Lights in the village.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a really amazing job of getting, I think, like hundreds of donations from local businesses and people and organizations that want to contribute. And we have it in our gallery space for 2 weeks so people can walk around and bid on anything they're interested in. And then at the end, we have a closing party where people can pick up their items and give us money. So
nice.
I think people have really come to look forward to it, and it's become an annual thing. We stopped for a couple of years after COVID,
mm-hmm.
But we've done it for the past almost 3 years now, and it's been really popular.
That's neat. So what are these percentages? So your total budget, what are you expected to... What do you get from taxes, and what do you get from fundraising?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot right now.
I did my math already.
I do. I have that information, but I'd have to pull it
up. You can just be rough. Just rough.
Yeah. So I want to say about 40% of our budget from taxes.
Mm-hmm.
We get like another 25% from our trust, and then the remainder is covered by like donations and grants.
Okay.
We have a pretty robust grant writing program where it's mostly me, but our assistant director, Jen, really helps out a lot. She's done some great New York State grants for like our archival collections and stuff like that.
Okay. That's the hardest part, I think, about the grants is sometimes you end up having to almost create something to fit the criteria to get the grant. And then you're like, well, why, then you're like spending money to get money, and it doesn't always make sense. Whereas there's always this push, like get grants. But they can often be so specific that you end up having to contort what you're doing to fit into the parameters for the grant, and then it just, yeah, feels a little false sometimes.
So I will say, I do have my exact numbers.
Good.
As of last year, this was before our vote, but we had around 12.3% of our budget covered by donations, and then the other numbers that I talked about cover from like taxes and our trust, and then the rest of that is covered by grants, operating income, and we do have a cash reserve fund that we can use, which is very helpful.
And what about membership? What does that do? Is that part of the fundraising, the 12%?
Membership?
Yeah. Well, that's what we call our annual appeal.
Oh, yeah, no, that's fit into the donations.
Oh, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Nice. I mean,
I know you do a ton of stuff.
I do a bananas amount of stuff, and I think of it like a stool with many legs. And so all together, you know, we have these different income streams, and they all create this sort of whole package. So, you know, just like you guys, we're an association library. So these association libraries were all formed before the time that you know, perhaps towns or whatever, they couldn't get municipal funding. The town didn't have enough money or didn't have the interest, but there were people that said, we really think we should have a library. So they created their own library. So in the state of Connecticut, there's, I think, 169, and there's rankings that show you wherever, you know, I'm sure you do it in New York where you get this, all those statistics, and you can see where you fit in the piles of different libraries. So we are kind of an anomaly in that we have a fairly low town appropriation amount, and we don't have a giant endowment. Generally, in Connecticut, the libraries that have low town appropriations have these massive, you know, had a donor 100 years ago or whatever who endowed their library, and they've got money that they can live off of. I'm thinking in particular of a town, I don't know how familiar you are with Connecticut, but Torrington, which is a fairly depressed, you know, former Rust Belt-y kind of town where it was lots of industry and such, they had a major benefactor. So they get like 98% of their income from their endowment, almost nothing in their taxes. There's no like tax line to pay for the Torrington Library. So we are in that funny position where not only do we not get a lot of money from our taxes, we do not get a lot of money from our endowment, though that is growing, and we're very pleased about that. But I can break it all down for you. It's all supported by the fact that we have a really big board. I have a board of 22, and they are all actively engaged in one way or another with the library. They're not just kind of yes men and women. They are, a lot of them have really specific roles in these individual fundraisers. So we have our first stool leg is the town of Kent, and the town of Kent gives us about 30% of our budget. So that's great. This past year we asked for a little bump because we were thinking we were going to need to cut out some of the fundraisers because we were going to move, and then we ended up negotiating that down because it turns out we're not going to be building until the winter. So they give us about 30%. And then fundraising is 50% of what we do. And that is a lot of money. That's about, it's almost $200,000 that we have to raise every year in fundraising ventures. And that includes our annual membership appeal. And that is budgeted to bring in about 15%, but it usually goes higher than that. It's been really successful in the last couple of years, so that's great because that fills any other little gaps. And the nice thing about, I'll get to that. Then we have our book sale, which goes on every weekend from Memorial Day through like mid-October, and that brings in that's budgeted to bring in about 15%. We have our annual benefit party, which is a lot of fun. We just finished that this weekend, and it was super successful because it was the only non-rainy Saturday, like the last 10 weeks, and then even this coming Saturday is going to rain. So we just threaded the needle in before it got hot. That usually brings in about 15% of our budget. And then we often have some other little kind of fundraising ventures. We have an art gallery, so we sell art. We have a parents committee that does like cute little bake sales and such. And then our last, the last major leg of income is, well, we do have a small bunch of grants that come in, other little random donations that come in. That's another, where's all my notes? That's about 3%. And then our endowments and our investments bring in about 16%. So it works out to roughly 100%-ish. But, of course, a lot of those events, things have costs associated with them. Like, I'm sure you have the same issue where you have to spend money to make money. So, but it's a pretty good return. We spend about $30,000 on all the different fundraisers that we do, and that's about 6% of our expenses, 6.5%. So, but the other thing you have to consider, I have to consider, is that that's, it's also me. You know, people often refer to me as the town librarian, and I am not. I am 100% not the town librarian. I worked as the children's librarian for 12 years, but really what I do as director is I manage the business of the library, and that includes overseeing all these different fundraisers. So, you know, when people think of me as some sort of bespectacled cardigan-wearing book reader, I am, but that's because I choose to be. That is not my actual job. My actual job is to make this whole thing work. One of the issues that we have, and this is probably true with a lot of organizations in the area that do a lot of things in the summer. I mean, it's a very busy time of the year for events and benefits and such, is that a lot of our money-raising ventures are weather-dependent. Mm-hmm. And that's a really bad way to run a business, if you think about it. So, you know, our book sale, if it's raining or threatens rain, we can't open. If our benefit is on a rainy weekend, We've done our sponsorship. That's where the majority of the income comes in, actually, in pre-event sponsorship gifts. But, like, ticket sales are going to be terrible. Auction bidding is going to be terrible. All that kind of stuff. The other parts of that income stream will be severely limited. So, really, the most significant way that we make money, that we earn money, is by asking for it. Just specifically asking for it. And I learned that early on in my tenure as director, you know, that events are great and they're an incredible amount of work, and they build community and they build library loyalty and all that kind of stuff, but they're not a great way to raise money because they cost so much money and they take an incredible amount of time. We, you know, as I said, we have to bring in about half of our money in fundraising every year. We are the number one in the state of Connecticut for the amount of volunteer hours, because it's I'm not exaggerating when I say sometimes 600 and 700 hours a month of just the people managing the book sale.
That's very impressive.
I mean, it's impressive, but it's kind of ridiculous when you think about the fact that, you know, if you didn't have these volunteers, everything would have to really get restricted in what we could do. You know, all of these different fundraisers take an incredible amount of manpower and rely on weather. It feels very tenuous much of the time, and it's frustrating. We get a lot of we have a lot of worried people, understandably, about the book sale in particular because of the weather. So they cancel when they have to because they have to protect the merchandise. It's all outside, basically exposed to the elements. They have a tarping system that works great, but it takes an hour to put on and an hour to take off. So you have to be watching the weather like a maniac, trying to figure out if these little pop-up storms are going to hit you or not. And so then you close preemptively sometimes. People come in, they get mad. The tourists, it's a big tourist draw. They've driven an hour to get to this book sale. I mean, we keep all of our social media up to date as much as we can, and our website and our phone messages and all that stuff. But even still, if they close the book sale and after someone's already left their home in New London, you know, we're stuck. There's nothing we can do. So it's challenging, really, really, really challenging. And what's been heartening is to see, every year that we've asked the town for an increase, maybe we didn't get the full amount, but they are willing to consider increasing our appropriation, which is wonderful. It is unfortunate that, of course, it is based on or depends on the whim of whomever is in office at the time, both the Board of Finance and the selectmen. And I'm in a particularly awkward position because my husband is one of the selectmen, so he can't even vote or even be in the conversations about it. So, you know, and if and we have a, we're a small town, so we often have board members of the library who are on either the Board of Selectmen or the Board of Finance. Right now, we, other than my husband, we don't. But again, they have to recuse themselves. It becomes this conflict of interest, I guess. I mean, it's not like anyone's financially benefiting, but you get it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just a challenge. And the fact that membership has been growing so nicely makes a big difference in that that's just writing a letter. It's just a letter that we write. I mean, we craft it. We usually have a, like a bookmark and pictures and yada, yada. But it, you just ask the people for money, and if they, if you're doing a good job, they will give it to you. That's sort of what what we've learned. And we have, you know, leadership donors who get personal letters from our board president. But you know, we've got, right now we're nearing a record for the number of individual families and people that are supporting us. And that's the most important number to me is, yes, we need to keep the doors open, and yes, we need to raise a certain amount of money. But the real indicator of the success of our fundraising and our relationship with our community is that number of individual donors. And that grows just about every year. And that's probably the part that I'm proudest of. The rest of the stuff is like a machine that kind of goes, and it's got its people that love it and they run it. But that number that says these are people that we have asked to part with their money to support what we're doing, and they have said yes, to see that just incrementally grow every year, that to me is the biggest sign of the support that matters, you know. And we're in a capital campaign that's been really successful. That's totally separate from this stuff, so we've been able to raise a lot of money, and that's a great indicator too. But again, like, people like the idea, you know, you were talking about your bricks, we're selling bricks as we're in this building process. People like that because it feels like something big and exciting to do in their town. But it's the little gifts every year, the, you know, $2,310 a month, you know, little things like that, that really show that people care about what we're doing and about what we can offer the community. That's my
speech. And I think that's one of the most heartening things about fundraising, is because you're like, oh, people like us.
Well, really. Nice. I mean, and, you know, I'm sure you monitor social media just like I do.
Yes.
You have to be always thinking, every person who comes in the library, I have to think, you know, is this something where am I reaching this person, and if I am, do they have either time, treasure, and talent to share with us? And sometimes it's just making sure that we have relationships with everyone who walks in the door because of that sort of social aspect, that social media, the word of mouth, you want it if there's someone who says, you know, what does the library do for us? We're not getting enough out of the library. You need to have that cross economic level support where people say, no, they're doing good things. They're bringing value to your town and to your community and to the state and the country and the world. And that's really what I do. So that fundraising, yeah, there's markers, there's financial markers, there's numbers of people who are giving, that matters. But it's, you know, the job for me, the job of the director, has been making sure that people feel like we're doing the right things and that we're responding to them appropriately, and that then the support will come.
I think that's beautifully said.
Ah, gee, thanks. I think about it a lot. I mean, it's, you know, I came from the boarding school world, which is also doing the same thing all the time, mm-hmm. where, you know, it matters. I remember a former headmaster said to me once, the job as a headmaster is one thing, what's coming in and what's going out. And it was a really interesting way to think about it, because it's about human beings, like what the quality of the student, the quality of the gifts, the quality of the amounts of the tuition, all that stuff. But also, where are these kids going to college? How are they impacting the world and then shining a light on where they came from? And that's kind of what we're doing, too. What's coming in the people, the support, the energy, the performers, all that stuff. What's going out? Like, what are we sharing with the group? How's our collection? How's our reputation? How, you know, am I engaged with as many different organizations and affinity groups in town to be a helpful problem solver?
Exactly.
You know, so all of those things are what I think about.
Yeah, and it never stops. I mean, since I started my job here a little over 5 years ago now, the main thing in front of my mind was we need to increase our 414 funding because we just need more money. to be able to maintain the level of programming and collection development and customer service that we have. Like, it comes from good people, honestly.
Exactly.
Like, the library is run by good people. And qualified people. So to maintain that, like, we need to have more money. So
you have to pay them. You can't. Yeah. And COVID really woke us up to that. You know, that we really were. What we were able to get away with payroll wise has changed dramatically since COVID.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, it's in everything that you do every day is like focused on like how. Can I make sure that we're in a secure place for the future so we can keep doing the good work we're doing?
Yep.
And it's exhausting, but also I feel like kind of exhilarating when you do succeed.
When it works. I mean, it is. It does feel great. I agree with you.
Sarah, do you want to tell people how they can help volunteer at your library?
Oh, well, sure. I mean, yes, we are always happy to have more people pitching in. All they need to do is there's a form online, but they can also stop in and meet me, and we'll put them to work. We're really good at that.
And I'll say for Millbrook, we have a really great Friends of the Library organization that are focused on fundraising and advocacy, kind of like for special projects. So right now they're helping us install a native garden in the front lawn, which is something that like we don't budget for. And they really support a lot of our programming as well. So there's a section on our website under support where they can learn more about that. But they're a really great, lovely group of people, and they work hard and. I really appreciate them. So.
Yeah, I know. Well, it takes a village. It sure does. It was great to talk to you about fundraising. As you notice, I can go on all day.
I know. I feel like this could be like 2 hours.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. Well, I hope we'll talk again soon.
Between the Stacks is produced at the facilities of Robin Hood Radio 91.9 FM, Sharon, Connecticut. Underwriting support for Between the Stacks comes from Lakeville Books and Stationery, 329 Main Street in Lakeville, Connecticut, offering a wide selection of illustrated books, fine writing needs, and more on the web, lakevillebooks.com.